All right, and today is the big day. It's Christmas for probably most of our listeners. The NFL draft will be going on in, I don't know, less than 12 hours, and I couldn't be more happy. I'm here with Josh DeCuster. Josh, how are you feeling?
I'm extremely pumped. I think Christmas is definitely an apt comparison there. It's, in very soon every single team is going to have a bunch of new presents to play with. So
Exactly, exactly.
it's very exciting.
And this is the eighth round, as you know. I'm Jason Mattson, and we were kind of talking before the show about what happened last night with the court's ruling. And Josh is a little bit more familiar with it. Why don't you go ahead and take it from here, Josh, about how the courts ruled the NFL might do it, they might not. Go ahead.
Okay, well, thanks. I would like to emphasize first that I am no lawyer, and most of my information is coming from, the various sources on the internet and Twitter.
Have you ever
But
played one on TV?
I was an understudy to one on TV,
Okay.
so not quite there yet still, but we're getting there. From what I have read and what I understand is that Judge Nelson has determined that the lockout causes irreparable harm to the players, as opposed to what the NFL was arguing in court, and thus has ordered them to lift the lockout. They initially had an appeal, I believe is how it worked, and to hold a stay on that ruling until they could get an appeal into the Eighth Circuit courts and, basically stall this and move this along. And last night she said, I see no basis in doing that. I'm not going to put a stay on it. Start the league year now. She's not forcing, she's not saying you're obligated to sign free agents or actually do any business. That's still up to the business itself. Kind of like if you go to court for a traffic ticket and they say, okay, do some community service to pay this off. You don't necessarily walk out of the courtroom and directly into a line to do community service. They expect you on your own to kind of get the ball rolling. And they're kind of doing that as well with the NFL. But the NFL has decided that they're going to continue to wait while they appeal in the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, and hope and they're hoping to get a better ruling out of that court. But I think, as a lot of people have pointed out, they're not having a lot of luck in courts over the last 20, 30 years. So this eventually is probably all going to end up, in them at the negotiating table, which is where they probably should just be right now after all of this.
Wasting all this time.
But as it looks right now, the league year should be open, so there technically should be trades in the draft, but I don't see that happening. I think the best we can hope for is that they'll actually sign undrafted free agents once the draft is over. I think that might be the only actual NFL business over, I mean, besides the draft, over the next few days.
Well, I guess I'll take it. I mean, beggars can't be choosers. So if my team can sign a couple of free agents after the draft that went undrafted, I'd be very happy with that. But so what you're basically saying is that the Carolina Panthers aren't going to announce tomorrow before the draft that they signed Peyton Manning.
Essentially, yeah. I know that there's a few fan bases that are hoping for some of the free agents to be let loose upon the marketplace, but it's really not going to happen. I doubt, and I'm sure there's agents. I follow a few agents on Twitter that have already said they're contacting teams, but I'm more than willing to guess that those teams are saying we're not going to talk about anything right now until we get it all figured out.
Definitely, definitely. That's probably the best way to go because, I mean, they might think that they have a player signed, or that player might think that they're signing with them. It doesn't happen
Oh, yes.
when
Something's
they're
still
able
up.
to sign free agents. That door closes, or they rethink it, and they don't want that player, and that leaves a bad taste in that player and that agent's mouth. And there's a lot of stuff that could happen, if teams were to start making these backdoor deals or whatever. So.
Exactly. It, too much trouble, and I think that they're all just kind of, I mean, they're still run by the owners who are with the NFL saying we're not going to do anything until we get a hearing on this appeal. So
Yeah.
it's kind of how it ends up, I guess.
All right, all right.
But at the very least, hopefully the draft won't be finished after Mr. Irrelevant. We'll still get to track a few players as they sign with teams.
Yeah, and I think that's another enjoyable part, at least for me. I mean, I've interviewed probably 50 players this off or from when college football stopped to now, and half of those, or maybe more than half of those, will probably end up being going undrafted, and just to see where those guys end up, and to maybe root for them to make a team, or even just make a camp roster, that would make me happy. So there's a lot of rooting interest, at least from my side. I know you probably feel the same way too.
Oh, definitely. I love that aspect of it. Just because then it's like, you know, it's basically who can. Let's make a deal. It's not we get to pick who we want. It's you almost in the free agents' interest. You know, they're going to have a bunch of teams calling them, and they get to pick who it is they want to go with. I'm sure that's actually what a few draftees would maybe prefer, but it's I'm sure they're getting a better deal than the undrafted free agents.
Definitely, definitely. And let's jump right into the next topic here. We'll talk about maybe some risers and fallers, and some of the guys we talk about probably won't fall out of the draft, but they're definitely losing some steam on their draft stock. Let's talk about a few risers first. Maybe you can throw one out there. Maybe we can take a turn here and there and see where we end up.
Well, one who's rising for me that I noticed is something we'll talk about a little later. Jason and I both participated in quite a few mock drafts on the internet and on Twitter.
I think I know where you're going.
Well, there's a guy I like, and over the there's these three drafts that we participated in. In the first one, he went undrafted. In the second one, I took him at pick 200, and in the third one, he went at pick 82. And I mean, that's a huge jump over, say, a month. It's Denarius Moore. He's a wide receiver out of Tennessee.
He's a burner.
And what's that?
So he's a burner.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's extremely talented wide receiver. He's got a great catching range. He's, you know, Tennessee's program has gone through some troubles that he had to fight through. But he's a guy who's shown he can take over some games. He's just a little inconsistent. And that's generally why he was, you know, considered a late round pick, and why I was very happy to get him at pick 200. But, you know, that rise, that's, you know, that's 100 and what?
40?
20 something spots to jump. I can't imagine anybody making that kind of, that big of a leap, but I'm sure it's going to happen in this draft because it does seem to happen more often than not.
Definitely. Those guys gain steam, and who knows what can happen. But a similar guy that I've been noticing going as high as even 8 is Andy Dalton. I don't understand it at all. I think he'd be a great, you know, third, maybe fourth round quarterback, and I've seen him at as high as number 8, and I think almost every mock draft that I've seen lately has 6 quarterbacks in it, at least, you know, at least 4, but a lot of them had 6, and Andy Dalton is right there behind, sometimes ahead of Blaine Gabbert and Cam Newton. I just don't understand it when it comes to him. He's a good quarterback. He performed very well. He's a winner, no doubt about that. He's a leader, but I just don't see it when it comes to his football skills as being the number 8 pick in the NFL draft.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. That is one of the more shocking things too. But I think you almost kind of answered it yourself when you first started, because you said it's all in the mocks you've seen recently. Yep. And what do we know about coming up here in the last week of the draft? It's lying season. People are, yep, you know, throwing out the smoke screens. Andy Dalton's the number 8 pick. You know, I'm sure there's people out there who absolutely love Andy Dalton and probably don't see a problem with that. But for me personally, he is, like you say, more of a, maybe at the best, a late second,
right,
early third round pick. He's kind of more of the game manager type, I think, at the NFL level, based more mainly on, you know, kind of physical limitations. I think he's a very smart, bright kid. Funny story about Andy Dalton in comparison. Last night I was watching Bill Parcells special, and he was talking about his mistake in drafting Pat White. And when he was describing Pat White in college, I just kind of closed my eyes for a second, because here's what he described him as. He was very proficient and successful statistically. He was a 3-time bowl game MVP, and he played, and he won a lot of games, like won most of his games. And, you know, I closed my eyes, and that's Andy Dalton to a T. That's what everybody keeps saying is so great about Andy Dalton.
Exactly.
And, I mean, they're completely different players, obviously, but, you know, I think people get caught up a little bit too much in the stats and college accomplishments, and because they seem to think that it's a direct correlation to the next level, and I just don't think it works that way.
And one thing I've learned in all this, I've been reading a lot about scouting and, everything that I possibly can. We had Dan Shonka on. I watched Bill Parcells. I've read multiple books. I mean, we've had conversations with John Dove, who's not with us tonight, but he's definitely a guy that knows a lot about this. Projectability is something that most scouts have to be good at, and just projecting a player to the NFL. And maybe that's it. Maybe that he projects into a certain type of offense or what. But I just, based off of what I, because I've watched a lot of TCU games over the past 2 years, and what I've seen is he's a good college quarterback.
And there's nothing wrong with
No,
that.
not at all, not at all. One other guy, I'll go ahead and another riser that's really been gaining steam at the end of the draft is a guy that we've actually had on our show. Unfortunately, that podcast had some technical issues, but we had Adam Frohman on with us, and he was a hell of a guy to talk to.
He's a great kid.
Smart, athletic. I don't know if you've heard this. He reminds me of a Jeff Garcia, just the way he moves around the pocket, his accuracy. He might even have a little bit stronger arm than Jeff Garcia, but he's. Before, I don't know, last month when we had him on to now, he went from probably a guy that went undrafted to I've seen him up in the fifth round. And that's a huge jump as well. And just a guy
I'll say.
that wasn't probably going to get drafted. Shout out to his agent, Greg Linton. He's worked his butt off to get Adam noticed. And that's definitely a guy that has gained some steam. Do you have any other guys that have rised up beyond expectations that you had maybe before the season?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head. How it can be though, especially at the how things start at the beginning of the season up till now, everything's in such flux. I think a lot of guys kind of end up exactly where you expect them to, based on personal preference. So it's like I say, with Moore, I was really surprised in how high he jumped. Maybe that's more of the consensus, because we're just draft nicks and fans out here doing our thing.
Yeah.
But I think that that would be my biggest riser. As far as biggest faller, though, I'm a guy who I think, you want to go back to the beginning of this season, draft season here. DeMarcus Love was an offensive tackle that a lot of people thought would be one of the top tackles in the draft, go towards the bottom of the first round. And now I see him going, fourth, fifth round, sometimes even later. But I personally still like him. And I think he'd be a steal at that point just because of his versatility, good playing both guard and tackle in a very pro style system there at Arkansas, that he understands line calls and changes and how to make them and all that kind of thing. He understands the huddle lingo, and there's a lot of things that I like about him, and I'm kind of surprised at how far he has dropped.
Exactly, and that's a guy I was looking at definitely. And I mean, there's been some talk too that he might move to guard. Who knows which team drafts him, where they need him. But I can see that. I mean, I had him as my back when we were with the other site with NFL Mocks. I had him as my third ranked offensive tackle.
I had him right up there too. I think I actually had him number two at one point.
Yeah.
Like, I thought he was going to be great. He looks so good in pass protection.
Yeah.
I think that, as you watch more and more of him, to get the bigger picture, he's just wasn't as consistent as you had hoped at first. And with his technique, and that's something that caused him to drop, even though I think that's something that's totally correctable at the next level once you're getting coaching, 24/7 instead of, 20 hours a week.
Right. Yeah. Another guy that I had him as my number one overall prospect, DaQuan Bowers. His knee has made some teams even take him off their draft board. Probably, what do you think? He's probably going to drop into the late teens, early 20s, I would say.
If he doesn't get grabbed by either Minnesota or Detroit, Yeah, he could fall pretty far because after that point, and there may be teams that prefer a J.J. Watt, a Ryan
Right,
Kerrigan.
there's a lot of 3-4 teams sitting there.
Yeah, and you know, even though Bowers is he's I'd say he's still more of a 4-3 pass rusher. He could fill in at that role as a 3-4 D end as well, but I think teams are getting pretty scared, which again is kind of crazy from the beginning of the draft season when he was that top guy. And I think that hopefully his knee isn't that bad, and some team is going to get a steal down there late in the first round.
Yeah, that's. I hope so too. I mean, he had such a great year. He was so dominant. It was fun watching him play. And then to hear that, it's kind of like seriously, because you hate to hear that for a guy.
Oh
And
yeah.
especially, and there's another guy too, Marcus Cannon, who,
Oh, such a sad story.
oh my gosh, he went from having testicular cancer to not having it, and now he has lymphoma, and he's got to go through chemotherapy and. And some a lot I've heard a lot of talk that he might not even get drafted now, which isn't important compared to his overall health, but he was such a good player, probably a second round pick, had all that money sitting in front of him, and now God willing, he's makes it through this in a healthy, I don't know, it's just a sad story. That's
Yeah, our prayers go out to him. I was such a big, I still am a really big fan of Marcus Cannon's. I think that he could be a Pro Bowl guy at guard just by on his size and athleticism. And some team is now going to absolutely steal him before the draft is over. He does have to go through chemotherapy, but everything I've read says he can make it a full recovery and get back to playing again. I think he has to go through 12 to possibly 24 chemo sessions, which would take, I'm trying to think the exact timeline, but it won't take an entire year to get through the entire thing and be hopefully clear after that point and then be able to play.
Well, he'd probably have to not be able to play, but he'd have to get his strength back, and I'm sure he'd have to get some size back.
Oh, yeah, he'd still have to, get back to being healthy after going through, I mean, chemo is such a. It just tears your body apart. So he'd have to get back into shape, healthy, then back into playing shape, and then be able to play. But I really think that, I mean, if you're taking him in the fourth, fifth, let's say you're taking him any point on the third day, there's a pretty good chance he wasn't going to play right away anyways, and you're going to kind of essentially redshirt him. So you're still getting that, but when he comes back healthy, you're getting a potential Pro Bowl player. So that's why I think if some team takes a chance on him late, it'd be definitely worth it.
Definitely, definitely. I agree wholeheartedly. You mentioned that Bill Parcells special. I thought it was pretty cool, and I'm gonna start using this actually, his A through, I think it was A through L scout rankings. Calling
Yes.
Jaquizz Rodgers a mascot, and oh my
I'll
gosh.
take that mascot.
Oh, I would too, definitely, definitely. But yeah, that I loved watching that last night. That was pretty enjoyable. We kind of mentioned it already. Myself and Josh, we both participated in the, I guess it swept Twitter by storm, the mock three draft. I don't think I saw every other tweet on my timeline was about mock three. Basically, for those of you that don't know, if you don't know, you're probably under a rock somewhere or not on Twitter, which is fine. It was a war room strategy, and just how I was the chief general manager. Josh, were you an assistant GM? Were you the GM of the Vikings?
I was the head guy
The
for the
head,
Vikings.
excellent. So we were both in charge of our war rooms, and what we basically what it was, we you set up. This is how we did it with the Chiefs. We set up our team needs. We set up our big board at each position, and then we had a BPA, best player available board. At least that's what I did, and I kind of talked to. I worked with Larry McDaniel from With the First Pick, and Joel Thorman from Arrowhead Pride. Those were my two assistant GMs, and it was a pretty strong group. And we I think we had a pretty good draft. I don't know if you want to share some of your experiences with it or not, Josh.
Yeah, oh, I had a great time. I got to work with Ryan Bouger, who is the head Vikings writer over at Bleacher Report, and Kyle Segal, who is one of the head writers over at the Daily Norseman here for SB Nation. And it was a lot of fun working with them. It was a little difficult at first because we're each in a different time zone. One's in Florida, one's in Minnesota, and I'm out here in California.
Right.
So that kind of made it a little difficult for, you know, hooking up at a good time. But we got to contact through email, and we set up ours somewhat similarly. We talked about previous – we tried to make it just like a Vikings draft. We studied previous draft strategies that they used. We looked at the type of offense that we were thinking that they're going to run. They got a whole new offensive staff. So we were pretty familiar with the defense, and we highlighted some players that we wanted to go after and some positions that we thought we needed to address, and just had a great time with it. It was a lot of fun. I don't know how you guys kind of structured it, but we were – I tried to make it – I wanted them to feel more – I didn't want to be like the iron fist GM. I wanted to make everybody feel like they were contributing, so I tried to get everybody's consensus going before we ever made any kind of pick or trade or anything like that. How did you guys run yours?
Basically, I said everything, and if they defied me, I'd laugh in their face and threaten to fire them. No, it was the same way. We basically, you know, I would throw something out there, or either one of them, Larry or Joel, would throw something out there, and, you know, we would either agree or disagree. And I wanted to get everyone's input on it, but, you know, sometimes I couldn't get a hold of Larry or I couldn't get a hold of Joel, so it was just, you know, the two of us working together, and we would make the pick for us, you know, majority rules, obviously. So, but
it was like that for us too. Like I say, sometimes it was really tough getting in touch with people. And I think that's what made some of the trades harder too. Everyone was trying to get in touch with all their assistant GMs and everybody to make sure everybody was cool with it. And so that everyone's so far apart that that took some time, but
yeah,
it still made everything interesting.
I mean, I give credit who was it? Impulse, PFF, Zaradev, and was it California Jag?
It was. I wish I knew their real names.
Yeah, me too. I have no idea what their real names are, those guys, I mean, for having 100, you know, 100 different people involved with this, they kept it running pretty damn smoothly. We got it done in, what, 6 days or something like that? Maybe even sooner than that.
Slightly less than that, yeah. Didn't we start? We started Mach 3, I think, on either Wednesday or Thursday. And we were done, and we only had like 5 or 6 picks on Tuesday of this week.
That it was incredible. That flew, and no one really picked on Easter. So
yeah, so you can toss that day right out.
Yeah, it was very fun. I hope. I was going to make a suggestion for next year where, you know, after the draft, anybody that doesn't get picked, each team gets 100 points, kind of like an auction, and you throw in a bid. Let's say that. Just an example, Adam Frohman doesn't get drafted and the Chiefs wanted him. I throw 50 points at him to grab him. And then they're all silent bids, of course, and whoever bids the most gets that player. I don't know. It's kind of a
nice little fantasy auction there.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. It was fun. Did you guys make any trades? I know
I'm sorry. Yeah, we did. We actually traded down in the first Cam Newton was the big surprise fall in this one. He actually barely made it out of the top 10. I think he ended up going in a trade at number 8 to Miami, of all places. And we ended up thinking that, well, if Cam Newton is going to fall and Gabbert fell a little bit as well, we might be able to get a Mallett, a Locker, or a Ponder towards the end of the draft. So we made a deal with New England to move down. And then once someone moved up to grab Mallett, we kept trying to make a trade to move up to get either Locker or Ponder, and it just didn't work out for us that way. So we ended up taking an offensive lineman. And, you know, our strategy was at that point, well, we didn't get one of the top QBs. There's not another QB to step in and start for us right away. So we had a lot of other holes to shore up. So we're going to go after those holes and make sure this is ready for the veteran QB we're obviously going to be bringing in at this point.
You're not going to roll with Joe Webb?
No. I do like Joe a lot. I think he's got a great future as an offensive weapon. I just don't know that that's going to ultimately be at quarterback.
Gotcha. And the Chiefs, we did something similar. We kind of targeted we said that if Julio Jones fell past number 6, that we're going to trade up and get him. And sure enough, he fell to number 9, I think. Is that the Cowboys pick, number 9?
Yes.
Yeah, we made a trade with the Cowboys, and we got to keep our second round pick. We gave them our first, third, and fourth for their first and a seventh. And it worked out perfect. And we turned that seventh round pick into Adam Frohman, actually. So we
got everybody you wanted.
Yeah, we were pretty happy with our draft. We got a nose tackle.
Well, now, what was the need, but what made you guys think you had to get Julio Jones? You have Dwayne Bowe, and he was catching. He got what 12 TDs in consecutive games. How did that go?
I don't remember.
He wasn't horrible. I think he was inconsistent at best. And you guys have quite a few other offensive weapons. What was the thinking behind going up and getting Jones?
Well, we have quite a few other weapons, but none of them opposite Dwayne Bowe. I mean, Dexter McCluster. Yeah, he's a good utility running back / slot receiver that maybe can stay on the field, maybe not. You know, depends on. I mean, he was hurt for five games last year. Of course, we have Jamaal Charles and Thomas Jones. I'm not even sure if they're going to bring back Thomas Jones once all this league stuff is taken care of. But opposite Dwayne Bowe, there wasn't really any star receiver or even an average receiver. And Chris Chambers, once he got his paycheck, he took the rest of the season off. We signed Kevin Curtis, if that tells you anything, to go opposite Dwayne Bowe. So there was nobody over there. We decided we needed a playmaker. We got Sam Acho in the second to play the opposite Tamba Ali. We got a nose tackle. We signed a running back for insurance just in case Thomas Jones is released. And we got a special team / utility linebacker in Nate Bussey, who we've also talked to. I actually wrote an article about him. And you know, his willingness to play special teams, I thought, was a key component to us selecting him.
Yeah, you guys had a really good draft. I liked yours. I think maybe New England might get rated with the most ludicrous draft. They ended up taking three first-round picks. I'm trying to take a quick look here. I know it was J.J. Watt, Tyrone Smith, and somebody else.
Did they get Alden Smith?
I think they did.
Yeah.
Yeah, they went Alden Smith, J.J. Watt, Tyrone Smith. In the third, they got Greg Little, and then they grabbed Lawrence Guy in the sixth after all their trades and picks, which isn't a bad haul for them. Not at all. I liked ours. Like I said, we didn't get the quarterback of the future, but we started shoring up the offensive line with Watkins. Definitely needs some more help up the middle there. We think he can start right away.
Still kind of mad at you for selecting my guy. Well, let you.
Which guy? Watkins?
No.
Oh, okay, you let me know.
Once you say his school, I think you'll know.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll get to him in a couple rounds here. Next up, in the second, after our trade with New England, we got an extra second instead of an extra third. So we turned our two second-round picks into Jonathan Baldwin and Raheem Moore. And the thinking behind that was Sidney Rice's status with the team is still kind of up in the air, and Baldwin is not a perfect clone of Sidney Rice, but they're both very big wide receivers. You know, they got a very big catching radius. They're very good at boxing out corners and defenders to get jump balls and basically overpower the secondary. And he also would work well in what we believe the Minnesota system is going to be, which is going to feature more Adrian Peterson than passing game.
Right.
And so he'll really be that kind of good red zone target, third down target. And if Sidney Rice does happen to come back, well, that's not a bad pairing right there. And with Raheem Moore, there's nothing I think the Vikings could use more on defense than a playmaker in the back end. And that's what we saw with Moore. And now for your boy that we picked up was Tim Barnes out of Missouri. We think that at the worst, he's a backup pushing for starting time on our offensive line. And I think that in the next couple of years, he's definitely either either still pushing for that starting job or he's starting for sure. Then we got some extra depth at tight end with Rob Hausler, defensive end with Pierre Allen out of Nebraska. We picked up one of my favorites, Ryan Jones, cornerback out of Northwest Missouri State. We did pick up Nathan Enderle, the QB out of Idaho late. But that was more on we've heard the Vikings like him, and we don't think he's going to be,
right.
you know, the starter next year, but he could definitely be competing with Joe Webb and develop into something pretty nice. And we ended up going with a kicker with our final selection just because Ryan Longwell is getting a little long in the tooth and it's time to start thinking of options there.
Excellent. Yeah, that's you mentioned how the Vikings are kind of interested. That's the same with the Chiefs with Adam Frohman too. They just brought him in, I think, last week for a quick tryout interview, whatever you want to call it. So
yeah, the Vikings did the same thing with Enderle here in the last week or so, and that's kind of why we thought, well, if he's there really late, he'll be an interesting pickup for us.
Yeah, I don't know if you usually do the smoke screens with, you know, 6th or 7th round picks. Maybe you do.
I don't see it, but yeah, it's all mind games at this point, so you never really know exactly what teams are thinking.
Definitely.
Hopefully, they're not really thinking Andy Dalton in the top 10.
All right, and before we end it tonight, let's hear maybe your top 5 picks for tonight's draft. Who do you have going top 5?
All right, top 5 picks. Now, am I going with what I think is going to happen or what I think should happen? So what I think is going to happen is I think at this point, Carolina is going after Newton. And then after that, I think the Broncos would jump at Darius in rebuilding their defensive line. Bills would go Miller to get that rush outside linebacker for their 3-4. Bengals, I mean, it seems like they're pretty much in love with A.J. Green. I don't see why that was necessarily a bad thing. And the Cardinals, I think that they will go quarterback and go after Blaine Gabbert. I think that he translates well to the offense they were running when they had Kurt Warner. You know, it was all mainly shotgun, just spread them out wide receivers and throw the ball around. And that seems to be his game from Missouri. I think that it could translate to Arizona.
Yeah, and he'd have a receiver in Fitzgerald that could just go up and get it. And if he makes a bad throw, you know, he'll make him look good.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. For sure. Everyone wants a Larry Fitzgerald on their team.
No question. Mine is pretty much the same. I have Newton going 1 to Carolina. I have Denver, actually. I think Denver's going to go either Peterson or Miller for some reason. And if I had to throw something at it, I'm going to say that they're going to go Patrick Peterson in Denver at number 2.
I think that's a really interesting choice. I really like Patrick Peterson. I think that's a great choice strategy-wise for the Broncos because this is a really deep defensive line class. They can get the best corner or secondary. Some people are saying he could end up being safety.
I think
he will. And they could get a guy, say, Marvin Austin. You know, there'll be plenty of defensive linemen, I think, there in the 2nd round and even 3rd that they can pick up to help rebuild that offensive line while – solidifying that secondary.
Yeah, don't they have like the 2nd or 3rd pick too in the 2nd? I mean, Stephen Paya, he might be there.
Oh yeah.
And there's
yeah, like I say, there's a glut of defensive talent, yeah. And there'll be something there for him.
All right. So
but I'm sorry. Keep going.
No problem. Buffalo, I think that they're going to go Von Miller. Cincinnati, AJ Green, and Arizona, Blaine Gabbert. That's my top 5.
And I think that because we agree on so many picks, there's no way it's going
to
happen.
Well, I have Darius falling to number 6. So,
well, I think Cleveland would absolutely jump on him. Yeah. I mean, I know a lot of people seem to think that they're a good landing spot for Green or one of the other possible offensive weapons at the top, maybe Julio Jones. But they're switching from a 3-4 to a 4-3, and that's a, you know, even if you're going the other direction, that's a big personnel change. And they're going to need more bodies for that defensive line because it just became much more important than rush outside linebackers, which you can find, you know, later in the draft too.
Definitely, definitely. All right. Well, excellent. I think that was a good one. We hope to be correct on some of our picks and some of our risers and fallers, you know. And we'll see you again tomorrow. We're going to do this every night after the draft, and we'll probably have a few guests on with us Friday night. So stay tuned, and thanks for tuning in.